There is every year a Hanukkah party in the White House. Now, when I say the White House, I don't mean the apartment block, the apartments on the corner of Maple and Central over here. But in fact, there is a Hanukkah party in the White House in D.C. And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, until just about a week and a half ago, they were still taking suggestions as to a historic, memorable type of menorah that they use. Every year, they try to find a unique menorah. They had one a few years ago that had survived one of the, I think, Katrina. There was a number of different menorahs, like the one which came from Europe. There was a lot of very fascinating menorahs that they've used. Last year, they used a more political one, which was from a school, mixed Arab-Israeli school in Israel, which was arsoned by Jewish terrorists. And so they used that as the menorah to talk about coexistence. But be it as it may, every year they have a unique menorah, and they have a Hanukkah party. And on the White House blog, they have a description of this every year and who the people are who are lighting it. And it sounds like a very honorable and very interesting occasion. So the question would be is the following: is you get a call tomorrow, and on the line it says, you know, I have the president on the line, and he says, you know, I'd like it to be that, you know, we've been thinking very carefully about who's going to be the person to say the brachos. And we decided you, as an upstanding citizen of the United States, who've been very supportive of my government, is going to be the person who's going to be lighting. I would like to honor you with the bracha of saying the bracha in the White House. And the question is can you say a bracha in the White House? Can you say a bracha in the Hanukkah party, which goes on in the White House? I mean, you're lighting Hanukkah candles. Let's say it's around the right time. It's past dark, which is most likely to happen because it's, the days are very early. So would you be able to light the menorah with a bracha? Sounds like a trivial question. In either direction, perhaps. You may have feelings in either direction. But this is actually a very interesting question because it is really a crux question which allows us a inroad into the understandings or the dynamics of menorah itself, of the Chanukiah itself. Because Generally, the Gemara tells us that the only place you're allowed to light a menorah is, right? And the Gemara says on Shabbos, Chof Aleph Mabez, as Saul points out, there's Ner Ish Uvesai. It's each person for their house. Each person needs to light on the behalf of their house. And that, in fact, is all the Gemara says. In the very short amount of Gemara that we have on Chanukah, those three blat in Shabbos and the Mishnah here and there, which is Merameis, to what's going on. We have very little to do, very little more than that. And that's where the Gemara stops. However, if you trace down through the medieval commentators, the Rishonim, you see that there's another custom is forming. A very interesting custom, which is actually a custom under dispute. And that is that we see an example of where we light the Chanukiah outside of the confines of our house. And that is in the shul, right? Our menorah is right over here. It's going to be lit this evening. And that's not mentioned in the Gemara at all. The Gemara never talks about lighting a Chanukiah in the shul. But we see a minag which develops, not clear where it started. It seems to be Europe is the general area. But it's commented on by all the Rishonim. The way that the Shulchan Aruch paskins it, this is in Source 1, Shulchan Aruch in Tafresh Ayin Aleph, Sif Zayin, says the following. Beis HaKnesses, and in the shul, Manicha B'Kois Al Darim, you place it on the southern wall, Oy bedroim a menorah misadrim mizrach lemarav, and you set them up from east to west. We're going to get to the direction a little later. Umadlikin umavarchim beveis haknesses mishum pirsum anes, and we light in the shul because of pirsum anes, publicizing that miracle.
So it could be a greater pirsum of the nisa than having it on television.
Great. So if we just stop, if we just stop over here, then you may argue that therefore, if the only variable in this equation is Pirsum Enisa, then we should say, well, let's try to expand Pirsum Enisa to the greatest place possible. Now, I'm actually starting backwards. So what I'm trying to work out is, yeah, we're learning the halacha, so you open up a Shulchan Aruch. But you see, unless you have the predecessors, the flows, the different minhagim which led to Shulchan Aruch, we don't necessarily fully have a grasp on the dynamics of this, and therefore the application of it. So that's what I want to do, is I want to start backwards and move reverse now as to where this minhag originates, and with that DNA of the minhag, then therefore see how applicable it is elsewhere within your logic. The Ramah tells us that Hagav ve'ein adam yotze b'neros beis shabbes haknesses. Even if you say Amen this evening, when you hear the menorah, you still go home and say a bracha. V'tzorich lachzur lahadlik b'veisa. You once again not in your house. V'nagim lahadlik b'veis haknesses by mincha l'mariv. The minhag is to do it between mincha and mariv. V'yesh nagim lahadlik b'erev shabbes koidem mincha. Okay, next Friday we're going to do it before mincha. Concerns of Shabbos, getting too close to Shabbos. So you can do it that you light one before mincha, and the rest are as the shliach tzibur is going through the rest of it. Okay, that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. So that is where halacha arrives at. But where did it start from? So where did it start from? And the more we can understand where it starts from, the more we'll be able to understand if it is possible to apply that to any other circumstances beyond the house, because this is our only example or model of something which is beyond the house. So let's start over here. The earliest place that I was able to trace back to, and I was able to find talking about this, is in a book called the Sefer HaManig. The Sefer HaManig is written by Rav Avram ben Natan of Lunil, and interestingly enough, he did a lot of traveling in his life, as you can see in the bio over here. He spent a lot of time, he traveled through France and ended up living in Spain, but he went through Germany. He spent a lot of time traveling, and he wrote this book based on a number of his responsa and his experiences as he went through these different communities. So we're talking about the end of the 12th century here, so 1155 to 1215, and living around about exactly the same time as the Rambam, actually. And he says the following: V'yiroeli de'ein chiyuva bebeis haknesses lahadik ner shel Chanukah kiim bebeis she'odom darboy. He says that I've heard, he's obviously responding to a minhag he's noticed when traveling Europe, that people are starting to light in the shuls. And he says, I don't think that that's a responsible custom. You should only light in a place where people are actually living. That Gemara says that you need to have the mezuzah on the one hand and the chanukiah on the other side. Implications, by the way, are that in a shul, it might not be a mezuzah. Okay, now this is just interesting point. There's a whole other discussion in halacha whether there's a chiyuv mezuzah on a shul. He's assuming that there's no in this case. Rebbeis like Nezus potter mi mezuzah. Can I read a pair coming to Yuma? Elo imkain yesh shom beis dira lachazan beis like Nezus. Unless the shul comes with a house for the shamus, right? The shamus lives in the basement or the attic. Some of these old shuls, they do have this, right? They have a nice apartment upstairs or downstairs. In fact, there's a few of the older shuls in Manhattan, if you go to and you ask about them upstairs, there's usually an apartment for the rabbi or the chazan or whoever else it is, the Baal Korei in my day. Ela nagu kach alzeh she'anes bo b'mikdash beis olamim v'oisim k'moy ken b'mikdash ma'at b'goyla lefarsem anes lefi she'kula miskabtsim shom. He says, but if the reason why this must have originated was because this is the closest we're getting to the beis HaMikdash. Meaning, where did the miracle take place in its origin? Was in fact in the Beis HaMikdash. So we, in our little way, how are we doing this? We're, so to speak, taking our Mikdash Ma'at in the Gola, and we're using that as our Pirsum Anais, as publicized in the miracle in that case. Isn't that fascinating? So he says, I don't think it's a good thing to do, but I'll tell you where I think it comes from. It must be based on the Mikdash. That's what the Sefer HaManig says. And this is based on his travels throughout Europe. Very, very early, one of the earliest places we've seen this minhag arriving. Now, let's follow the strand through the Rishonim, because interestingly enough, each time it's quoted, they quote it with a very different feeling or understanding. The next is the Shibbol HaLeket. The Shibbol HaLeket, just a little later, so he's living in the 1200s, he actually spent his life in Rome and learned a lot under the German and French scholars. He has a sefer which is actually very, very often quoted by the Beis Yosef in the Shulchan Aruch. And he says the following: Kosov bal hadibrois zal, not sure who that is. Nagu lahadik ner Chanukah bebeis haknesses. V'yes mekamesh shenagu lanichal pesach. So he says there are places who light in shuls, and some people even put it by the entrance of the shuls. That's not our practice today. V'yeshu menichmas be'emtsa beis haknesses ad kan devarav. He says some people put it in the middle of the shul like we do. V'gam anu nagim lahadik bebeis haknesses v'lo yadanu shoresh v'anaf leminagzeh hazeh. He says I don't know where this came from, right? Meaning if we open the Gemara like the Shavuot Lelechet did, there's no indication that there should be anything outside of your house. Umari Reb Yehuda Achish Mishani Neru Hayon Nimna Milahadlik Shelo Levarich Aleha. So my teacher, and would actually, my teacher Rabbi Yehuda would not say a bracha on the candles in shul. He didn't feel that a minag warranted a blessing. Seeing as you're going to say a bracha at home, there should be no reason to light in the shul, unless, he says, v'ilu hayu archim yishen v'beis ha'knesses, hayu shahayim tzrichim lahadlik, tekamen lo nachsanai chayv b'ner Chanukah. So he says, if you have guests in the shul, now remember, in those days, the shul sometimes actually acted as a place for people to sleep. In the back benches, people passing through town, and that would be the place that they would actually have this to sleep. There was no Motel 6s, there was nothing else happening. So this is where they would actually spend the night. In that case, says the Sheba Olei Leket, one cannot. Why could one not? Because the shul's acting as their apartment, essentially, for the night. And they have a chiyuv of hadlaka. They don't have anywhere else to light because they don't have anywhere else to stay. So in that case, they should light. But should there not be guests, he believes that there's no point in the minhag because all of us who are going home afterwards and lighting in our houses have no reason to rely on that which is in shul. And there's no other foundation for lighting in the shul, says the Sheba Olei Leket. So interesting thing we're seeing from both the Sefer HaMaanig and the Sheba Olei Leket is that in the early 1200s, was this an established minhag? Not clear, meaning they're questioning it. They're seeing it, and they're commenting on it, but they don't believe that this they're concerned about whether one can do it, or whether even if one's doing it, once there's a bracha on it. This is just an important point as to like the development of minhagim, as we're watching over here. However, if you move a little later in history, you already see that it now becomes much more accepted. This is the tshuva of the Rivash, and the Rivash over here is actually very fundamental in application to today. He says something which is quite remarkable. The Rivash is started off in Barcelona and had to flee the Jewish communities in Spain and moved to Algiers. So he headed south across the sea and became the chief rabbi in the rabbinic court there. So the Rivash is responding to a tshuva about lighting in the shul, and the person who's questioning him asks, well, isn't it a bracha levatola? How can you say this bracha? And this is his response. He says the following, tshuva, in the second paragraph. Haminag hazeh lahadlik bebeis haknesses, minag vatikinhu, mishum pirsum nisan. It is an ancient custom. So he's saying, it dates back much before my time, and the reason is the underlying principle is publicizing the nais. Are we really fulfilling the mitzvah as the Gemara says it? We're not. We don't put our menorahs on the whole, outside of Israel. As a community, we don't put our menorahs by our Pesach, by the entrance of our house, like the Gemara tells us to. So seeing as we don't do that to its, we'll call it, grade A performance, Kidistan Bahi de Gamal Ton Pishton, this is a mission in Baba Kama, actually, that talks about when a camel's walking through the public domain and it's carrying flax and it passes by a menorah and lights up, and who's responsible for the damages? One of the few places that Chanukah is mentioned in the Mishnah, in the end of the Perek there in Baba Kama. So he points out that where is the Chanukiah, clearly? The Chanukiah is, at the time of the Mishnah, by the door, or hanging out right outside. So that's how the camel can bump into it. He says, "V'kemon she'ata she'yada umas tokfa aleinu." Since we are living in a state where the nations are very strongly against us. Remember, he's speaking from experience, right? So he's the one who fled the Muslims in Spain. Right? So seeing as we're living in such a circumstance, we cannot fulfill the mitzvah as appropriately. We light on the inside of our houses. And therefore, the publicizing the miracle takes on an internal meaning. Right? Who's the people we're publicizing it to? Is mom, dad, grandpa, and the kids. So therefore, the pirsum minisa is now much more nuclear. Publicity. So what happens? Where did the minhag develop? The shul became the expression of the pirsum in nisa, which was no longer available. Isn't that interesting? The shul's minhag developed as the chanukiah receded from the door to the window, or actually in his days, not by the window yet, because that's still dangerous. As it recedes inwards, we see the emergence of the menorah in the shul. Fascinating. Fascinating minhag. He says, generally speaking, if you have a minag, you don't say bracha on a minag as if it's a real mitzvah. Right? There's only a practice at this point in time. He says, nonetheless, that's only by a lightweight minag. Like the minag that we have today to hold the arava and to beat, we don't say bracha on that. It's such a public expression of what Hanukkah is supposed to mean that of course there's a bracha on it. It's a replica of what should have been. Unbelievable. And even though it's a minag on the halal of Rosh Chodesh. Unbelievable. Do you see what the Rav Ash is saying? What a unbelievable historic insight that Rav Ash is adding. Very different. Because let's recap for a second. Manning had said that it's only a function of, it's sort of reconducting the miracle that occurred in the Mikdash. Whereas the Shibboleth Halakhah says, if it is a custom, it's because of the guests sleeping on the back bench. The Rav Ash has got a whole new way of looking at it. The Rav Ash is saying, no, this is in fact filling the void. Yes, Ira.
This comment seems to say that the mitzvah of presumably Nisa is not dependent on how many people participate in the mitzvah, but in how they're doing it publicly. Because I assume Tumei Nisa was more people involved. If they're already involved in their home, you gain nothing by doing it.
Good.
Before.
Good.
Right. He's saying it has nothing to do with how many people. It has to do with the publicity of
it. I agree with you, Ira. Because you know, speaking, if you're going to speak in sets, like you know, sets of people, the set of people who are in the shul almost exclusively will be lighting at home, right? But nonetheless, the fact that they're all in one place and they're all singing and they're all lighting it, nonetheless, is more of a Pirsumi Nisa. So your point is well taken, that Pirsumi Nisa isn't necessarily about the sheer numbers, but about perhaps the wow of the occasion. Okay, that must be what he's saying. Okay, because he's not addressing the guest issue. He's not saying that the people are not lighting. He's just saying that the publicity of here. Very fascinating point, and I agree with that, which is a good point to keep in mind when we're trying to sort of express this the Rav Ash elsewhere. Outside of the shul. We have one or two other wrinkles in this. One or two other wrinkles, and then let's pull this to full closure. The Sefer Kolboy, which is again a little later, we're in the 1300s now. This is Rav Aaron ben Yaakov HaKohen in Narbonne, France. Points out a little bit, it might be a little bit of a conglomeration of what we've seen up to now, but the way he suggested is the following. V'nohagu, so he suggests two things. Number one is that we're doing it in shul for who? On whose behalf? On the people who don't necessarily do it themselves, who's not either conscientious enough to do it themselves, or is not necessarily well-versed enough to do it themselves, which unfortunately, Bedareinu, think about it, four-fifths of the Jewish people are such. That might be a miscalculation, because Hanukkah is a very, very public part of Judaism, but certainly a large fragment of the Jewish people today are not lighting, or not necessarily in the correct way. And so he says that what we're doing in the shul is on their behalf. Very different perspective.
Are we assuming they're
what was that?
Are we assuming
I don't know. It's a good question. This sounds like Kiddush on Friday night. It's a good question of whether they're in shul or not. I'm not sure. I would assume the Kolboy is assuming they are in shul, but they perhaps don't have the necessary wherewithal to be able to do it. Which is a little, it doesn't relate exactly to our situation, because unfortunately our shuls are very nuclear. We have the people we like, and we stick with the people we like. And the people who aren't doing things aren't necessarily... not clear to me on that exactly point. On that exact point, I want to just cover a little bit of ground just before addressing some of the questions. That's all right. And he does circle back to Pir Samanais, but he doesn't explain. I would assume that he's going in the direction of the Rav Ash, which is that it's a greater Pir Samanais in the shul when we have a lacking. Is Moshe? Can we hold for just a moment? So that's what the Kolboy says. This is really the end of the era of the Rishonim. And that translated into the Shulchan Aruch when the Shulchan Aruch says his ruling, based on all these different tracks. Post the Shulchan Aruch, we have one extra reasoning, which is a little bit different and unique, and that is the Bir HaGra, the Vilna Gaon, now already in the 1700s, but he adds in something which wasn't said up till now. See, in his very, very terse comments, see if there's a way we can actually understand what he's saying. He says, again, this is his note on Shulchan Aruch, and he says, Madlekin, this is in source 7. Raya mihalel belele psachim sheniskal al akois v'omrim v'beisak nesas v'shum pirsum enisa. What is he saying? What is he saying? So, but let's look at his example. So he's saying that there's halel in lele psachim that we say it on our kois, meaning where is he referring to? At the Seder, right? So at our personal Seder, we're saying the Halel with a Kois, and nonetheless, we still say it in the Shul, Mishum Pirsum Enisa. So look at his model. You see that even though there's a practice which is actually in the house, that practice overflows to the Shul with the Brocha. And that's what the Vilna Gaon is saying over here. You see a later developed Minag which still necessitates the Brocha in the context of Shul. That's what the Vilna Gaon says. Now, folks, let's think about this for a moment. Examining what we have up till now, so how would that translate into public places? So let's say you have a wedding, right? Their wedding's on Hanukkah. Let's say you have a party, a Hanukkah party. Let's say you're in a stadium. Let's say you're in the White House now. So based on the reasonings that we've had, what would translate? What would possibly translate? Let's go one by one, okay? So according to Sefer HaManik, the Sefer HaManik said the reason for this minhag is because of the Mikdash Ma'at. So according to the Sefer HaManik's understanding of this minhag, there would be no translation because it's only a function of Shul, because that's approximating what was in the Beis Hamikdash. According to the Shibbol HaLeket's understanding was because it is a function of the guests and perhaps on their behalf. So in this case over here, I would doubt it would be likely because unless the president is allowing you to sleep in the White House, unless you have people staying over in the stadium, or sleeping there, that's not going to necessitate a bracha necessarily if you're outside the context of the shul. Now we move on to the Rivash. According to the Rivash, maybe we might have some ground to work with, because the Rivash is saying that in the absence of the public display outside our houses, now for therefore what takes its place is the shul. So you might be able to argue that, well, what could be a greater venue of Pirsum HaNes perhaps than, let's say, a ball game or at the White House, which is going to be broadcast or is at least going to be on the blog or is going to be in the news. So what could be a better form of Pirsum HaNes? And the Rivash, in no uncertain terms, was saying that you do say a bracha because this is not a minag kal, like our Rav Ezi said. This is a minag. It's a minag chashuv. It's a very strong minag, so therefore it necessitates a bracha. Maybe the Rivash is grounds to go with. The call boy again is not clear because referring to the people who don't know or don't have the wherewithal, it's not clear if they're in the presence or they're right there in the shul or not. More a little less clear. According to the Vilna Gaon, you may also have more grounds to work with because when you even though you're doing your own Pirsum HaNes at your Seder, nonetheless, it flows over elsewhere. So maybe the elsewhere doesn't have to necessarily be a shul. And that's the discussion that the Poskim start dealing with. This, by the way, is just to see, when you read a Shulchan Aruch, it's very hard to know necessarily, you know, whether you can extrapolate from that Shulchan Aruch unless you really have the flow up till now. So this is the flow up to now. This is the applications. Interestingly enough, just as a side note, before we move on from Shul, the Trumas Adeshen is asked the question. Actually, he asks his own questions. The Trumas Adeshen, Rav Yisrael Isserlin actually formatted his book, the Trumas Adeshen. He created the questions because he formed it as a response, but he wanted to tell us the specific answers. So he asks the question is which direction do we light the Neros in the Shul? Do we light it facing the Aron? Do we light it parallel to the Aron? And he says it's based on the Machlokes and Menachos about, in fact, how the menorah would stand in the base of the Mikdash. And he points out that the different minhagim and naro poshte, that each minhag has its validity. And he comments on different communities that he saw doing differently. But in the end of the day, where the Trumas Adeshen, the placement of the menorah, the Chanukiah, and the Shul, is falling very much under the rubric of the Sefer HaManik, who's saying that being as our Shul is a Mikdash Ma'at, so therefore the pattern or the way that we do it is going to actually be formatted based on the base of the Mikdash. So interesting, the placement reverts back to that original Sefer HaManik. Now coming back to our case over here, the application in public. A kotel. Every year at the kotel, there is a public lighting. And yes, there is a bracha. Yalkut Yosef, this is the son of Rabbi Yadi Yosef, quoting his halachas, says the following: "Bakotel amar Rabbi haminag apashut shemavarchim umadlikim neros chanukah bebracha bein minchal amariv v'yesh bedavar pisume nisa." He says it is absolutely clear that at the Kotel one says that it says a bracha on the candles, and there's no greater pisume nisa. However,
why isn't that like a shul?
Yeah.
Oh, good. It's like a shul in the sense that we have a minyan there. It's not like a shul in the sense that it is actually a enclosure or the regular way that we look at a shul. There is the underneath part, but nonetheless, it's an easier application to apply. However, if anybody remembers, last year there was a Nets game on Hanukkah. Remember that?
Yeah.
And at halftime, they had a basketball menorah. Remember? I actually found a picture of it. The basketball. Who was that? Danny, you were there at the game. And they had a nice halftime break, and there was a big hadlaka, and they did it with a bracha, right?
Right.
Yeah. So at the Nets game. Now that's incredible pure sumanista. So what about those kind of places? It's a little more distant from a shul, right? As close as we could get to Elliot. Good. Yeah, when what Elliot's bringing up is a very good point, and that is that when we're in the middle of this conversation, we're talking about pirsum inisa as if it's a blanket concept. But it is important to realize that we need to think about who the audience is. So when we're doing it today inside our houses, it's clear that the audience is our family, right, which is certainly Jewish. But the question is in the days that it was at the Pesach, who was the pirsum anes to? So there you see different strands in the Rishonim that talk about this. But I would like to point out one thing, and that is that when describing the shiur of the zman for that the Chanukah candles are supposed to be lit for, the Gemara tells us ad tichla rigla de tamudai, until the feet of the last people in the marketplace were gone. Who were the tamudai? Rashi on the Gemara there explains that they were non-Jewish people who'd be collecting the last twigs at the end of the marketplace, meaning they would collect the last twigs that were left over from the marketplace and they use them as firewood. So already you do see that there is a discussion, and I believe that it's a bigger perspective of Pirsum Anes. And so I totally agree with that, and I think that even the Maccabees video has a keyum of some form of that. Yes.
Wouldn't that affect like with the White House?
Yes.
Lighting, he's not going to leave till 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 in the morning. Going back to his own apartment, he's by himself. He flew out by himself. He's not having his wife light at home. It's after the correct time.
Yeah. So no, it's a little more complicated for him. For him as a person, not so simple, because you know you're right. He's going to be there late, but still, we paskin that unless you're actually sleeping in the place, you light at home, and you only light at home with a bracha if there's somebody awake. So it could be a complicated case for that person, unless they're going to have somebody do it for them, or that their wife's awake, or there's somebody in the family's awake when they come home. It's not so poshut. Let's get a little further, folks. I want to just get a little further, because there's a little bit more ground I want to cover in the most contemporary poskim. Okay, so what you'll find in the more contemporary poskim is that the predominant view is that of what we're about to see, which is the Tzitz Eliezer and Rav Sternbach. The Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Oldenburg, who passed away just recently, says that he's asked the question if you're allowed to say it at a mesiba, at a party. And in the second paragraph of Source 9, he says, Baru Radavar She'en Levarech, you don't say a bracha, Upuk Chazi Kama Diyos Nishtapchu Bekesher Leminag Adlok Bebes HaKnesses. Look how many inks were spilled, ink wells were spilled trying to understand the minag of saying the bracha in shul in the first place. He says, you'll see, and we noticed some of them ourselves, some of the early Rishonim were concerned about even saying a bracha in the shul. So therefore he says, you yan b'sefer Orchos Chaim. And he goes and he brings the Shimon Aleket and the Shut Rivash and the Birkei Yosef and the Shut Maram Shik and the Shut Hisoyrus Tshuva over Oed Yayan Sham. Al Kain Borur Uposhut Adavar Shain Bekoychenu Lahoysif Oed Ulahanig Lahadlik Lavarich Alakus Nerechanak Bim Sibois. He says, if we see that we're so hard pressed in the first place just to get to allow a bracha even in Shul, who are we who are going to now say, okay, at any Chanukah party suddenly, we can say a bracha on it, says Rav Oldenburg. And listen to his sharp language. He says, wow. A person who says such a bracha, it is in vain. Wow. And if you don't, you're getting schar on not doing it. So he is very sharp about this because he feels that that we view Pirsuma Nisa as not a blanket concept. Pirsuma Nisa, there's parameters, there's guidelines, and we struggle to find the guideline allowing the one in the shul. But more than that, he says, I'll be very careful. Similarly, in the tshuva of the tshuva Sanhagos, Rav Moshe Sternbach, he also says, he quotes all the Rishonim, and he says in the second paragraph, the first paragraph, Horesi dati she'en bozeh din adlok of a bracha klal. There's no halacha of a bracha. She'ikra adlok of a segneses hu mechudeshes v'donu bo tuva poiskim eich mevorkim ala minag v'hovu delo lo yisif ala. We shouldn't add to it. And he says that, and he goes on in the second paragraph, a very interesting point. He says, Elufi zeh nireh she'chobas adlok of a segneses b'bracha eino el b'mokom kavua litzvila v'loi kishinisasfu b'akrai. He's asked actually at a wedding. That's the question he's dealing with. Not a party, but a wedding. And he says, so why did you say, well, there's a great crowd here. There's a huge amount of people. And they're even going to daven Mariv maybe, right? So why did you say that that's sufficient ground? So he says, because you don't have a... this is not considered a base Knesset kavur. This is a minyan b'akrai that people happen to be here because there's a function. That's not enough that grants us the halacha of a shul, which would allow the hadlock in such a case. Similarly... actually, it's quoted in the Harei Kelim in the name of Rav Soloveitchik, the following. Interestingly enough, he first suggests that the reason why it is that we, in fact, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that we light Bein Mincha LaMariv, why don't we light later? Meaning, why isn't that we light after Mariv, like we do at home? Why is that? He says the reason we light it Bein Mincha LaMariv is because while there is still Mariv, there's still a Din Tzibur over here in this Shul that therefore we're allowed to light in the presence of. That's the only thing which allows us to light. Similarly, that's what he says on Motzei Shabbos, usually at home, what's that order we do it? The order is we do Havdalah, and then Halakos Ner Chanukah. Why is it that in Shul, we know the Minhag is flipped, we do Halakos Ner Chanukah and then Havdalah in the Shul? Why do we do light the Chanukah candles before we do Havdalah in a Shul? He says, because at the point of Havdalah, the notion of community is dispersing. Meaning, this is what's happening now is this at the end of the service, there's not going to be a sense of community anymore in the shul, so you don't have the right to light in the shul, says Rav Soloveitchik, quoting his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. And then you look in his own words, this is the top of page 5, and there's the brackets on the left column at the very end. He says, He feels that the limitation of a chanukah in public is only when you have the definition of it being a shul or a congregation along the same lines. And this is the predominant view of most of the poskim. If you go through most of the poskim, you go through Rav Shlomo Zalman is quoted as saying such, Rav Val Yashiv, most of the poskim are of such a nature. However, you will notice that that's not the only line which is taken. And in the other direction, you will notice that, God willing, this week in Cedarhurst Park, we'll be doing a Chanukah lighting with a Chabad. And in many of these public lightings, there is a bracha. Right there are many public lightings, which seems to be the direction that Chabad is taking. So there happens to be a fascinating tshuva. Now, I don't know. This is a tshuva from the Oz Nidbru, Rabbi Binyamin Zilber, who's really on the other side of the fence on this. And they say... they say that this tshuva was actually written to none other than Lubavitcher Rebbe. But it's hard to know because unlike the rest of his tshuvas, they actually write the question at the beginning and then his response to it. So you see who wrote him the question. This one, the question has been removed. And even when he responds to him, I just bought the introductory line, the name has been removed. But listen to the way he talks to the person. He says, Yushpa... Shifas brachos mina shomayim. Well, Arena Kvoid, I'm not sure the exact acronym over here. Hagoin, so on. So he says that you, Hashem should grant you great blessings, whoever this person is. Tomol niskabdon igeres kodesh chuvois beinine Chanukah ve'enu zokuk ledidi. He says, I received your holy letter. He says, but how could I even answer it? He says, you see, you know, like, so whoever he's writing to, he obviously has an extreme amount of respect for. Okay, so not clear. So I've heard people say this is to Lubavitcher Rebbe, and he goes through and he really champions the Rivash. And in his championing of the Rivash, he says the following. At the very end of the Shuvah, in this Shuvah is where he talks about Ketanim, and he talks about very big menorahs, and how big can your biggest menorah be? Meaning if it's above 20 amos and things like that. That's his discussion. And then he says, V'af she'en ha'minag lahadlik b'chol ha'makom ha'shel ha'sifas rabim. Zel biglal she'mistama kol echad kvar yishtatev v'adlokas beis ha'kneses. He says the reason. He says some people are concerned about lighting in public. He says that's because they've already lit in their shuls. Seeing as you're a member of a shul, your shul's got you publicly covered, right? Even if you're not there. If you're lighting in the center of a city, which is the question he was asked, and you're lighting on behalf of the youth who are there in this public, let's say, mall or gathering, and it is very clear that many of them are not members of any particular shul. It's better than a shul, because it's really outside in public. He says, even though you see other flows in the Rishonim that were suggested as we saw, he believes the main predominant view is because of Pirsumei Nisa, and he trumps that, therefore that trumps everything else, and he's able to say there's even a brocha in these public gatherings. Unbelievable. Moreover, the Yalkut Yosef, Rav Avadia is quoting Rav Avadia. This is in source 13. When it comes to these parties, which are on the nights of Chanukah, that when we try to bring Israel through these Chanukah parties closer to Hashem, they certainly have the grounds to rely upon. Since you have a huge gathering of people, like Gorim Beis HaKnesses, it's no worse than a shul shemadlikim boy neiros chanakol epirusam minisa. And he adds an extra note: v'toyv lihispalel shom arvis betzibur. It's a good idea if you're in such a place to daven in the same place. Umiyad achar hadlaka, because what are you doing? What's he saying? Essentially, you're recreating the shul at the very least. Now, remember, this is Rav Sternbach. And what was particularly against this point, Rav Sternbach was actually saying that the fact that you gather is called ba'akrai. You haven't created anything. But nonetheless, says Rav Avadia, no. That's sufficient grounds to create the community necessary to almost model what the Shulchan Aruch was saying. And he quotes the Yalkut Yosef and the Mu'adim, and he says, and listen to the, he says this lovely kuv if you can't daven Mariv. It's a good idea. And he quotes the Sefer Mishnas Yaakov, Oz Nidbru, which we just saw, in a number of places. We saw the first one, Vushut Beis Mordechai, Vushut Yad Nasan, Chelek Beis, Vushut Mishnas Sochir. Kedarka Bakodesh, quotes everybody who's ever said this, many of whom we never learnt, unfortunately, inside. Zilbasa Taima Shul Mishum Pirsum Minissa, Bimishum Shiesh Asara. And therefore, in this line of poskim, and certainly as it is adopted in many places, there are certainly grounds to say it, even with a bracha, based on this Oz Nidburu and the Rav Avadia Yosef. If one would be in the situation where one has to open the Pandora's box themselves and ask the question, it would really depend, I would assume, what community you're part of, and therefore what the leadership of that community is takes. The predominant view is not to, but there certainly is a large section of the population who do, and it is an incredibly piercing. If you want to take a look, there's a picture of the national menorah on the bottom of page 6 over here, just to get a sense. The national menorah is outside of the White House. That's the White House, below it on the bottom right corner. Just to get a sense, this is not the menorah in the White House, this is the menorah outside the White House. And, you know, I have to say that we are blessed to be in a generation where these are our discussions. We are blessed to be in a generation where we can be asking these questions in the first place. And rather as an issue of something which separates us, I think this is an incredible testament. Just to go back to 1938, there was a story of a family, the Geyer family, who were running in December 1938. They managed to get American visas and they were crossing over the border eastwards from Germany, going east into Europe after Kristallnacht. And they were traveling on a train. It was the eighth night of Chanukah. And as they're traveling, they have their visas, they have their passports, they're leaving everything behind with their two children, Judah and Regina, and they're on the train. And as they're coming near the checkpoint, and it's coming time, it's just become dark. And the father, Judah, feels very, very strongly that he needs to light a menorah. But at the same time, they're still in German territory, and his wife is saying, you know, Judah, there'll be many other times you can light menorah in your life. Just wait. And he's internally conflicted as to what he should be doing. And the train stops, and there's it's at the checkpoint. The Gestapo are coming to check through the trains. And as they're at the station, all the lights go out in the entire station. And before anybody can do it, his visceral, natural reaction is he immediately stands up on his seat and sticks his hand into his case and pulls out a small package and puts the candle holder along the window and lights the 8 candles and puts the shamash next to them. And this is the only light in the entire train station of hundreds of people in their second-class apartment in the compartment in the train. And immediately seeing the lights, so all the guards start running. And everybody's telling him, put them out. And he doesn't put them out. He holds on to them, and the Gestapo enter the coach, and they're actually very happy because they think that this person brought travel lights to be able to help him. So they all start checking Uri's passports to the light of the candles. And they finish checking everybody else's passports, and they move on, and they thank him very much for being so thoughtful, and they move on. And he waits and sits there with the family until the candles burn to the last drop. And as the candles go out, the lights in the station go back on. And, you know, we have to think, you know, Baruch Hashem, there are people who made tremendous sacrifices in previous generations for Neres Chanukah. When you read about Natan Sharansky, and he is having to etch out on the wall in his cell the picture of a Chanukian drawing a flame on each of those etched out drawings, there was a time where it was very, very hard, and there still are in certain places in the world. We are very blessed that Baruch Hashem, the question is can we say a bracha on these public gatherings, and our 30 feet high menorahs in front of the White House, is there a din of bracha on it? Mitzvah Hashem, we should be able to continue to live in a place where we're able to bring out our miracles into the public.
Amen.